listening to Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Got Paranormal. Is a talk show based on the integration of shared ideas coming from multiple perspectives within a round table format. Designed to examine assumptions and to expand awareness. Join S.E. Burns and her co-hosts as they make sure you have got paranormal.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Tonight we have two guests joining us, author Gian Quasar and adventurer Steve Doran, and they will be sharing their ideas on Bigfoot. And take note, they have different perspectives than what you're used to hearing. Joining me again are my co-host Robert J. Bradbury of the Gut and Bone Show and our professor of history, Professor Earl Shandemeyer, will be here. I know he's been trying to log on Skype, so we'll just wait for him. But in the interim, we have plenty of entertainment for you between Gian and Steve, believe me. Gut Wrench will be monitoring the chat room, so if you have any questions, he'll do his best to include you. Welcome, gentlemen.
It's good to be here. Even though I have to spend an hour or so with Mr. Quasar, I'm gonna put up with it because I love doing the show. So I'll just sit back and try to enjoy myself.
Okay, Steve, I appreciate you coming on because you were on our show before. We were talking about lost tribes, and I was really interested in hearing your perspective on Bigfoot, although I kind of blew it off because I had talked about Bigfoot a couple times on my show. Do you remember that? And I kind of was refusing to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, and all that time I was trying to get Gian Quasar, the silent one right now.
He's probably busy feeding his face, so that's why he's not talking.
I had no idea.
Look who's talking.
What?
My gosh, you get out of the pool and people are sitting.
Well, you never told me you wrote a book on Bigfoot. I would have been hounding you to come on about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm here now.
Okay, well, perfect. I really appreciate it. I really do. So your book is called Recasting Bigfoot, Uncovering the Truth About Sasquatch Amidst the Hype of Bigfoot. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, where do we want to start?
I don't know. You take over. You tell us, because it's a different perspective than what we're used to hearing.
It's slightly an expose of the popular enigma, plus going after the real article, the worst facet of investigating popular unexplained topics is that people associate it with the popular discourse or myth that has arisen around the topic. So you say Bigfoot and they think you're talking about this giant 9-foot-tall cone-headed Gigantopithecus or something. The legend and the folklore become the reality. So Recasting Bigfoot is named this way because I'm taking it back to the original evidence and starting afresh. And Bigfoot is based upon the legends of Sasquatch. I think everybody knows that. That's an Indian legend. And Sasquatch to the Indians meant two tribes of people. And giant to the Indians always meant 6 to 6.5 feet tall. And it's white man that distorted this thereafter and then started hoaxing more, and we got all this folklore. And so now people believe that Bigfoot is this giant cone-headed ape man walking around all of North America, if not the world. And even worse, they think it's a Yeti. And there's simply a much more interesting truth behind all this.
Well, Gian, I don't mean to. I need to interrupt you for 1 second. When we say Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, I was under the impression that was because that's what it's called from different parts of the world. Is that correct?
No. Yeti is something entirely different.
Okay. What is Yeti?
Yeti began it all. Yeti is the size of a 14-year-old boy. It goes down on all fours when it's in a hurry. It is called the Abominable Snowman sometimes. It is probably a genuine example of the modern living Gigantopithecus. It has a totally different footprint than Bigfoot. And so it is from that that the American Bigfoot has built up this legend that they had a Yeti, despite the fact they had a totally different footprint that they were tracking.
Wow, thank you for clarifying that. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I know you probably lost track of what you were talking about.
No, but I was done.
Oh, okay.
I was done introducing it.
Why did you even get started in researching Bigfoot?
I don't know. I guess a knack for trying to solve mysteries. I grew up in the decade in which worldwide mysteries were the big thing. It's called paranormal now. It's just the unexplained or the occult back then, which I prefer to call it. And so I got in that knack of investigating, but I don't investigate the folklore. I don't investigate the popular discourse. I actually go and try and investigate the topic and find out what the facts are for myself, not just believe all the books and the myth and so forth.
Okay, and before we get into some more detail about that, Steve, you told me that you did believe in Bigfoot on our last show. You're an adventurer. Did you go on a journey looking for Bigfoot? How did you get into the Bigfoot phenomenon?
Well, actually, when we discussed it last time, I never said that I believed in Bigfoot. What I said is that I am not prepared. We find new species all over the world all the time. I believe that there are creatures that exist that we don't know about. On different expeditions that I've personally been a part of, we have found evidence of large, big-footed creatures, as far as finding tracks and that type of thing. However, as much as I hate to agree with John, I do believe that most of it is based on myth. When you look at some of the historical accounts, they'll even call Bigfoot, they'll refer to him as being handsome, and looking at them from afar. And typically it was when they were cooking. So a lot of those stories, I think, came out of back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, when these stories were recanted. We had a lot of people coming to the New World, if you will, out in the wilderness, probably for the first time, had no skills or wilderness skills to speak of. Some of these people may have been out there, had mental issues, whatever the case may be, and they were drawn to the campsites based on the smell of food, and yet, you know, they didn't want to approach the people in the camp, so they would see this, you know, hairy, naked guy from a distance and assume that he was some kind of creature when, in fact, he was just a human being that didn't want to approach the camp. So I do believe, like I said, that there are creatures out there that we have not yet identified. What they are and where they come from, I really don't have any idea. As we discussed on the last show, I don't believe that there's some shape-shifting phenomenon or they pass between dimensions. I don't believe that at all.
Okay.
No, that has nothing to do with it. That has nothing to do with it. One, in cryptozoology, one is looking for an undiscovered real creature. All that other business of what, you know, psychic Bigfoot, and that's someone trying to capitalize on reports of an unidentified primate. Actually, when you weed through it all, the reports are very consistent about what the Indians were talking about, and the artwork is consistent in the Pacific Northwest for the wild man. As I said, the Indians believe there were two tribes of Sasquatch men. It's a district in British Columbia called the Sasquatch. That's where the name comes from. And in Chinook, they often use George as guy or dude. That's the Chinook jargon.
Tribe of dudes.
Yeah, so it's, and the Indians pronounce George as Chotch. So Sasquatch George, Sasquatch man became Sasquatch Chotch.
Okay, so let me get this straight, just so that listeners can follow along. It seems to me that you, John, excuse me, are under the impression or believe that the Sasquatch or Bigfoot, as we call them today, could be a prehistoric or just a unevolved humanoid. And Steve just believes it's a creature. So in any respect, neither one of you believe that it's something paranormal.
No, it's, two tribes. So one, they believe it was human. One could speak the Douglas dialect or something approximating it. The other, as they describe very clearly, is not human. It is a primate. Mm. And the Indian artwork does identify very key features, and which would suggest it's actually a Native American ape of some kind.
Ape?
Loosely used, an anthropoid. A Native American anthropoid.
Would that be like the only ape in America?
I would say there's two species in America. One was clearly believed in at one point, called Amerantripodus loythi, which there's a picture of one which Francois Deloy shot one in Venezuela, and it exists in a lot of legends and reports from Pedro de Sieta de León and Raleigh, and Indians and British surveyors all discuss this five and a half foot tall hairy wild man, which is considered to be bigger than the chimp, they said, and the orangutan. And the Indian artwork.
Is that the one? The Pacific, I hate to interrupt, Jane. I'm not trying, Jane, or John, I'm not trying to interrupt. I said I'm not trying to interrupt you, but is that the one that we refer to as Lucy's monkey?
Lucy's monkey.
Yeah, the Lucy, I believe I pronounced that right. Is that the one you're talking about?
I don't know what Lucy, you mean Lucy, Leakey's?
Yeah, the one where they shot it and they propped it up in the sticks and took a photograph of it. Is that the one you're referring to?
Oh, no, yeah, that's Deloy, Francois Deloy. They call it Amerantripodus loythi, Mr. Deloy's ape-like American.
Okay.
So that would be the one.
I'm just trying to follow along.
Yes, that is that was condemned. Deloy was condemned. They said that had to be a hoax because it looks just like a spider monkey without a tail. But the size of the crate upon which this anthropoid is set secures its height at around 5 feet tall. And so Deloy was still tremendously condemned for saying that this was real. He was in charge of his own petroleum expedition. He lost half of his more than half of his men in the Venezuelan jungle over, you know, fighting with the Indians and the exposure and so forth. And then they were accosted, basically, by these two creatures, male and female. And they shot this one, it's the female, and propped it up on the crate. And because it so resembles a spider monkey, which is a four-footed small monkey with a long prehensile tail, Sir Arthur Keith, loads of people condemned Deloy as perpetrating a hoax. But one professor did believe him, and then more began to believe him and studied it, and that's when it got the name Amerantripodus loythi. And that's a bit controversial to this day in the realm of zoology, because no other one has ever been shot or captured or seen clearly. However, the artwork of the Indians of the Pacific Northwest reproduced the features of this exact same creature in wood, in totems, and masks, and so forth. And this is what they called the cannibal nude tribe of the forest.
Are those pictures in your book?
The artwork is in my book, yes.
John, how many years have you been researching this?
About as long as the triangle. I just had no reputation for doing it. I stayed out of the fray because Bigfoot becomes a very strange, and the human world. There's a lot. It's a very entertaining world because, you know, everybody gets rude with everybody else. But it's not really something I wish to associate with. You know, the conventions and all that, but I started in the early 90s, same time at the Triangle. I've always had an interest in these topics.
So I don't understand. You're on the fence on whether or not, I mean, how passionate are you? You seem, you have all these this perspective, do you call yourself an expert? Because your perspective is, I can barely follow it, what you're talking about. It's on a higher level than I can deal with, to be honest with you.
Well, an expert is someone who's qualified to disagree with someone else.
But shouldn't you have some hands-on knowledge? Have you ever held anything as far as physical evidence in your hand that convinces you that this thing exists?
No, beyond the picture and the comparative of all the artwork, no, I've never come across a track anymore.
Not even a track?
I'm not really sure, not even a track of what could appear to be the Loisy. They're described in old journals that mm-hmm. could be the Loisy. But no, I don't know of anybody since 1988 that's come across a track we can really say is real.
Is there any DNA on this stuff?
No, I would not believe any of the DNA that they've tried to say there's DNA, but that is so contaminatable.
Steve, what
I talked to forensic experts at the DA's office. DNA is usually something for the popular forum. It's something that is used within crimes to help point toward something, but on its own, it doesn't really.
What? I'm confused. It doesn't what?
It doesn't really clinch anything.
Well, what if I had a chunk of meat that I said I chopped out of a beast that I killed in the woods, and we have the DNA test run, and it gives us some information. Couldn't that be some verifiable evidence of whatever
it's like hair analysis or feces analysis. Just says it's nothing classified.
No, I said a chunk of meat.
Yes, they will give you a different DNA than human being or bear or something. What you have to take is the finger.
Finger?
Or if you can take the head, take the head.
Oh. Steve, do you have any idea of it, if anybody's ever found any kind of DNA or anything?
Well, when I was working with Doug Hychek on Monster Quest, he claimed that they had actually obtained some DNA evidence where the creature, the hair that they found from the creature, did not match any DNA known to man at this present time.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that, Steve. I was going to bring that up. You worked on that?
Yeah, well, I actually consulted with Doug on the expedition portion and how to best, if they're in an area where Sasquatch, quote-unquote, existed, how to best capture them on film, how to build the blinds the technical aspects of capturing the evidence for the program. As far as the scientific portion, I had nothing to do with that. You know, my experience has typically been from an expeditionary perspective. Whenever I do an investigation, I try to remain neutral. I don't go in with a conclusion and then try to find the evidence to come to that conclusion. I go in with a completely open mind, and the problem that you have whenever you're dealing with a Bigfoot-type creature is 99% of the people that you talk to or that you're dealing with, they already have these preconceived notions, or they have things that they've heard from other people, and they just regurgitate
mm-hmm. right.
the same information over and over and over again. And then with the Native Americans, a lot of them consider it to be a spiritual being, so you know they approach it when you interview them from a spiritual perspective, and really a lot of the information they give you is just complete and total nonsense, and again, they're just regurgitating what they heard from someone else. We have, or I should say, I've been a part of situations where they've come across tracks. We were never able to obtain any type of evidence that we could send to a DNA lab, no hair samples, blood samples, anything along those lines. But like I said, I just don't buy into 99% of the information that's floating floating around concerning Bigfoot. Like I said, with all the expeditions that have been launched, with all the money that's been thrown at it, I think that that we would have a lot more information than what's available out there. And the problem is, John mentioned it a little bit, is that everybody wants to have a sensationalistic story about how they went out and to look for Bigfoot, and it seems like whether they see anything or not, they always come back and they have this this sensationalistic story about what they did and what they uncovered and how this thing was throwing rocks at them and all this other stuff, but there's never any evidence to back it up. The film is blurry or it's non-existent, the camera broke, the batteries went dead, and so you have all these uncredible people going out there, and because they so badly want to report something back, they just make it up.
What's with the rocks, anyway? Why does everybody say it was throwing rocks at them?
It's known to do that historically.
It's what?
Historically, they were reported to do that from frontiermen. And Indians reported that to the wild men would throw rocks as defense for offense.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense now. So back to John. Why? And I was reading that your facts are disturbing and intriguing. Can you give us a couple
about the two tribes?
Yeah, what's disturbing?
One of the tribes probably is human. There's no reason to doubt what the Indians are saying. They describe people. They could speak a variant of the Douglas dialect. At least that's how the Indians described what they heard. But they looked very much animalistic. And the Russians were investigating that as well, about the Almas and the Byambyanguli and so forth. These people who appeared very animalistic and had a very large footprints with a toe consistently a bit inclined outward. And, of course, the Russians are describing a footprint that we associate with Neanderthals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indians in the very original J.W. Burns articles are describing people similarly, and they knew nothing about them. And so that's it. That's what we've forgotten. We've forgotten that people were involved, and that another one of the tribes, the two tribes, was clearly an animal. I mean, we know what the footprint looks like. The Indians describe it. We've seen pictures of it. A sheriff at Ruby Creek, British Columbia, traced one in 1941. It's the first tracing we have, and it's not a human footprint. But the Indians describe this as a very tall man with a very tall, hairy beast with a man's face. And it was tall enough that it could simply step over a CPR fence, which is about 48 inches tall. When they tracked footprints, one footprint was on one side of the fence, the other was on the other side. It simply stepped over it. And that clearly could not have been a human, since we have an outline of the footprint, and it's nothing humanoid at all. So that's the disturbing reality. There's more than one. There's people and an animal that look very similar. And that's what we have to go look for, not this cone-headed giant ape. I don't even believe most of these expeditions that people claim they were on are even legitimate.
Taken
pictures out on the corner of the forest. But
it seems like if you haven't had any experiences yourself, what are you classifying as viable information that you can latch on to? I mean, does it have to be a professor with multiple degrees, or does it have to be a native somewhere that, I don't know, maybe they hold some kind of rank in the tribe or something like that? I don't understand. You say there's no way that you would believe that these sightings from certain people claiming that it's a cone head shape that could be. I don't understand.
Comparative analysis of all the data, the cone head was never described by the Indians. It does not appear on Indian artwork, on other stone heads. You can date the day that they became a cone-headed giant. That's in 1953 when René de Hinden got involved and he believed he had a Yeti, and the Yeti does indeed have a cone head.
Hmm.
And so, December 1953, we can actually give a date on when the very Indian legend of Sasquatch began to be warped by some early Bigfooters belief that they had this Yeti from the Himalayas.
So it sounds like your research it sounds like your research has led you on this journey where you thought you were going right, then you weren't. You thought you were going the right way, then you weren't. And a lot of disappointment, and it's probably put you in the perspective that you really seem to be a little bit disgruntled as far as what other researchers and folks like that are trying to give up as information or evidence about these things even existing.
No, I'm not disgruntled. It's just going back, I was quite thrilled to find out what the actual data was, that there was something really to go look for, but it's simply not the cone-headed giant of legend.
Well, what is the absolute worst bit of evidence that somebody's tried to provide? And
The Patterson film is really horrendous. Cripplefoot's
okay.
Another one.
Steve, what do you think about that film?
What, the Patterson film?
Yeah.
I think it was a decent Hollywood production for the time. You know, I mean, he was able, you know, with very limited resources, he was able to put together a pretty good film that convinced a lot of people for a long
time.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree.
But I will say this, I'm going to live to regret this, but, you know, because I'm being recorded and this will like live on throughout history, but probably one of the best researchers out there as far as gathering information and going through it and eliminating a lot of the BS is John. I mean, his work is impeccable when it comes to research. So even though he may not have gone on expeditions, although he may not have actually, you know, held evidence in his hand, his work is, like I said, it's impeccable, and the amount of information that he gathers and goes through, mm-hmm. the average person wouldn't be able to do it. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, most of the stuff he says is credible. Anything he says about me is not credible, but he does do a very good and thorough job in everything that he gathers. So, you know,
right, he's kind of like the guy that collects guitars and can play at the same time.
Yeah, but it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a frontline guy to, you know, to accumulate information and make
sure.
a decision based on the information that's out there.
I would like to know what it would take, though. I mean, are you eager to find some evidence, or are you eager for somebody else to find it?
Nobody who looks for Sasquatch is eager for somebody else to find it. That's the longest-standing joke that even got written up after the big Bosberg fiasco in 1969 when all the Bigfooters were out in Bosberg, Washington, toting guns trying to find Cripplefoot. Someone finally wrote in the local paper, this is like an old Bogart film, you know, where there are all these people with idiosyncratic differences in goals unite for a while and to try and get the common goal. But he said Sasquatchers are alike only in that each one wants to find the Sasquatch, not that each one wants someone to find the Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same to this day. I just don't... from my experience of going out into the bush, and from what I know of other expeditions, I really don't consider there to have been a genuine, credible expedition that went deep into where Sasquatch has always been reported to be. And it was never Northern California. That's where
right.
Pacific Northwest Expedition was located.
That's interesting.
Right.
Well, the problem is that
it takes... Number one, it takes money and it takes time. And no one has dedicated the money and or the time to do a thorough job. Every time that I've gone out, it's been with a film crew or news crew or whatever the case may be. And literally, it's like, okay, we're going to go out and we're going to do some interviews and we're going to see what we can come up with, and we've only got 7 days to do it. You can't even do a thorough job in 7 days. And like I said, it's the same old story. You go up, you interview the witnesses, you get the same, you know, everybody's regurgitating the same story that they heard from someone else, or that they've or they just make up their own version, you know, and it doesn't make any sense, and you can't, you could never prove any of it in a court of law, because most of it is very difficult to follow, and they mix the spiritual with, the minute amount of evidence that you come up with. So, it's a very difficult, it's a very difficult subject. And until somebody comes up with several million dollars and a tremendous amount of time to dedicate to it, it's just not going to happen.
And they would have to go to the
Sasquatch.
No one's ever gone to the Sasquatch, where the very name comes from.
Why not? Why? No, why haven't you? Why haven't you, John?
Well, I've been up there. I don't have the facility to go in toward Morris Mountain. No one's ever been to Morris Mountain, and that, according to the Indians, is the center of the whole Sasquatch country. You cannot easily get in there without a huge expedition, like in an old Tarzan movie.
I'm confused. I don't understand.
Morris Mountain is the heart of the Sasquatch district of British Columbia. It's a mountain where people have not been, and the Indians say that is the center of where the Sasquatch tribes.
But why can't somebody like Steve go there? He's like an expert in this, right?
Well, he could eat his way there, I'm sure, but he's probably the only one.
He's the only one who can eat his way
through the Amazon and come out 20 pounds heavier at the Andes.
Why are you doing that? He's an average weight man. Like, I don't. You're so mean.
He's an average weight man for what?
As someone who eats his way through the woods.
No, but I'm being serious. Why, Steve, why aren't you going there?
Why am I not going there? I mean, financially, I mean, let's face reality. To mount an expedition like that, it's not that it can't be done, but it's expensive. And, I don't know about you, but I don't have, several million dollars hanging around that I can liquidate to go on something like that. I mean, obviously, if somebody had the dough, I'd have no problem putting the expedition together and even bringing in a portable crane to take John along with us. But the reality is that it's expensive, and nobody's willing. Like I said, even when you go with production companies, money's always an issue. And even though they have, they may have a few million dollar budget, it's still not enough.
Okay.
Well,
that makes a little.
You had a few million dollar budget.
What?
I didn't know he had. Was anybody ever had a few million dollar budget in reality TV?
Well, no. I mean,
I've always had. They've always complained to me. I've had to be an associate producer.
No,
budget is always a big deal.
I'm bothered.
No, but the thing is,
if Jan has this information, obviously he's done all this research. He's blowing me away, I'm sure, along with a million other people. Why isn't somebody with a lot of money? People pour money into a million projects. Why aren't they pouring it into this project and going there? I don't
get it.
They've
never heard of the Sasquatch.
Well, when you're talking television, everything. When I said they have a few million dollar budget, I'm not talking about for a singular expedition. I'm talking about, for everything that they do. They're the entire crew for the season. And so they're looking to put something together that's sensationalistic enough for people to continue to watch. It has to be entertaining. It has to keep them on the edge of their seat and long enough for them to have the big letdown at the end of the series. But the thing is that if someone was actually serious and they had the funding, you could actually go out and do a pretty, decent job at finding out, as an example, if John's theory is true or not true.
All right, listen, I have to. What's that?
And no one's ever gone to the Sasquatch, because Bigfoot stole the limelight. Bigfoot of Northern California.
Which
had absolutely nothing to do with the Sasquatch.
Okay, we're going to come back to that. I have to take about a 4-minute break, guys. So
right.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Tenacity Radio, your source for eclectic talk and music. Can't make it to a show? Check out the archives at tenacityradio.com or listen to them right on your iPhone, BlackBerry, Palm Pre, or Android. Go to tenacityradio.com for all of the details, show schedules, and more. Tenacity Radio, real entertainment, no excuses.
There are things in this world that are unexplainable. Footsteps in the night, disembodied voices, and sights that chill us to the bone. Uncovering these mysteries one by one, Mystic Seekers Paranormal Investigation seeks to find out what bumps in the night, using a mixture of science and spiritualism to make the mysteries of this world just a little more clear. Listen to Mystic Seekers Tuesdays, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Tenacity Radio.
Join DJ Mozo, the Mercurial Stranger, in the seventh house.
I am on the air.
I am on the air.
Every Friday evening at 8 p.m.
I am Mozo. 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 Mozo.
On TenacityRadio.com. Real entertainment. No excuses.
You are in the seventh house.
The seventh house. The seventh house. The seventh house. The seventh house. The seventh house.
Every day, ordinary people around the world are having extraordinary experiences. 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 Experiences.
Some of these experiences are profound and life-changing, while others reveal a cold, dark truth that's unfathomable to the human condition.
To the human condition. To the human condition.
Join us as we discuss the paranormal, close encounters with the unusual, and interactions with the supernatural.
Join the Enigma Project.
Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on TenacityRadio.com. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Join me, Essie Burns, as I interview all areas of style, from interior design, fashion, arts, beauty, and more. Every Tuesday, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, here on Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.
Okay, everybody, we're back with author Gian Quasar and adventurer Steve Doran. We're talking about Bigfoot and their refreshing, actually, and unique perspectives. Gian, quickly, what are some other books that you've written besides Bigfoot, recasting of Bigfoot, I'm sorry?
Into the Bermuda Triangle, They Flew Into Oblivion, which has to do with Flight 19 and my search for it, Adele the Facts, and then my search in the Okefenokee Swamp for its remains. Recasting Bigfoot, Soma, which is a novel, kind of a black humor novel. Distant Horizons is due out anytime now, which is a compendium of sea mysteries.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear that right. What was it?
Distant Horizons. It's a compendium of sea mysteries. It's due out anytime now.
Oh, awesome.
Hell Ship came out this year. That's both a novel and expose on the disappearance of the USS Cyclops in 1918, which 309 men vanished. And I'm working on my Jack the Ripper book right now and a Mary Celeste book, and then the Zodiac Killer book, which will be Speak of the Devil.
I am going to talk to you for the rest of my life. I hope.
What was that?
And then don't forget his ebook, How to Eat So Much That You Can't Get Out of the House.
Hey, I got to tell you, there's somebody in the chat room that's taking offense to all these eating jokes. I don't know why. He seemed to take it personally. He actually left the chat room. I think he's ashamed.
Was it Christopher?
You should have thrown him out.
All right, well, Seriously, John. Why?
I'm fat. Steve is fat, you know.
Nobody's fat here. Just stop that. Nobody eats a lot. We're all very busy.
I think we're all fat, spelled with a PH.
There's no time to eat.
You should have seen his eyes bug out when he read that article on the fat eating virus.
Ooh, I gotta get me one of them.
Oh my God. Okay. Why do you think your book has had, you mentioned a couple weeks ago, John, that your book, Recasting Bigfoot's been up in sales lately. What's that about?
I don't know.
I don't know. See, I'm a heretic. I'm obviously not talking about the big names that do know me that actually requested a review copy of my book. But I don't know what's going on. I expect it to be slammed a lot more. And everybody is simply silent about it. No one will speak about it, but they won't speak against it. Because it's not what they expect.
I wrote an excellent review.
What?
I wrote an excellent review.
No, you were on another book. You just got screwed up. You wrote a review for me on the Flight 19 book, and people didn't know what you're talking about this hairy thing for in Flight 19.
I'm always defending you, and I don't even know why.
I know, because he's so mean to you, Steve.
I know it. I'm always defending him.
I think he's jealous. I don't know.
I think he is, too.
All those nice messages about how I bring joy to your life. And
John, do we contact you? John, do we contact you directly to get the review copies?
Hell no.
Do we contact Steve?
Yeah, contact me. I'll be happy to get you review copies.
You did a what coffee? A perfume?
A perfume coffee.
All right, I want to get back. Let's get back to Bigfoot. Wait a minute.
He flaked on writing me a review on Amazon.
Did you write a review or not?
I did write a review, and I wrote it, and I actually defended him when some lady went totally insane and was extremely mean, and and I actually defended him in this research.
Yeah, but that was on Flight 19. He wrote it in the wrong place.
All right.
Well, hey,
I'm still freaking out about his Jack the Ripper book, Robbie. I want to know all about that.
You should find out how to get review copies so you can check it out. He won't tell us.
Right. Let's bring this back to where we were.
I don't have any copies anymore. I don't have any review copies.
Let's bring it back to where.
Go
Bigfoot.
Buy.
Okay, let me bring
actually,
up.
Actually, this is no wait. No. I need to get this straight. Do you think this exists? Like, is this Bigfoot community somewhere in that area that you're talking about? Is that what you think? Seriously,
dudes.
Me? In the Sasquatch, I believe Aloysi could be there. I believe that a Sasquatch could be there.
And they're as smart as humans, John? Really? They're living in a community.
Well, monkeys do. Apes do.
Right, and they're only there, you think?
That's what the Indians said. This was the last place of the tribe. The Klickitat and the Chinook also said that of the Skookum, that Mount St. Helens was the last place. And this was already in 1847. The Indians always said these are, they're just down to a remnant now from once having been tribes. And the Klickitat told Paul Kane, artist, he wrote Wandering Amongst the Indians, whatever, in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And he described what they talked about, the Skookum of Mount St. Helens, and that they were the race of beings of a different species who are cannibals. That's the only way the Indians could qualify what these...
Oh, my God.
What these beings were. They were a race of beings of a different species, an interesting redundancy, who are cannibals. They ate people.
Oh,
so they're considered human enough to be cannibals, but they were not like any human beings they'd ever seen.
Anything called Skookum probably does eat people.
Did you...
That's what all the Indians said they did, ate a trapper that was in there.
But you're not speaking to descendants recently of these tribes, right? You're just going by research.
For Paul Kane's, right, yes, the Skookum.
Skookum.
I went back to the 18th century. I went back to South American stories from Jesuit fathers who were talking about the hairy man beast down there.
Well, we got 15 minutes. Can I ask you guys, if I mention a name, give me your opinions? We'll go with John first. Robert Lindsay. All right, Steve, your opinion?
I have no opinion.
Okay. Shall I go into that, Susan?
No, I just can't. John, are you the... Not yet. I'm not
That's
convinced.
Fine.
I don't understand why people aren't even... Obviously, other people searching for Bigfoot have read John's book, and they're going, oh, well, I don't understand why more people aren't focusing on that area. Yeah, it costs millions and millions of dollars. Let's just say $5 million to go do it. But
well, it takes a while
outcome,
to raise that
wouldn't
kind
it be
of money.
Worth it? What?
Yes, it would, but you have to organize people who actually understand what they're looking for. They're not.
Well, that would
go
be Steve Doran, right?
Well, he doesn't have $5 million.
No, if somebody gave
him...
Stop. I'm being very serious. Steve, if you were given $10 million, I don't know how much it costs. You're an expert in the wilderness, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So
if I had the money, we could mount an expedition where we could actually get some real answers without hesitation. Because we could cut out, we could eliminate all the hype, we could bring in real experts, not these people who do things to get a sensationalistic response, and we could actually go out and we could actually obtain real evidence, either for or against, you know, based on John's research.
Is that part of your, is that a dream of yours, Steve? I'm being serious.
Well, I mean, it's always nice, you know. I mean, one of the reasons that I became an investigator and one of the reasons I do what I do is I love solving a mystery. So it doesn't matter what the mystery is; it's always, you know, it's always very fulfilling to go out and answer questions that haven't, you know, that have long been unanswered,
sure,
regardless of what that is. So, yeah, I mean, it's always, like I said, what is it, a dream? Not necessarily, but would it be nice to go out and actually get some real hardcore information on what's going on? Yeah, it'd be great.
Now, the fact that John, you said they're cannibals, would this be extremely dangerous for you guys? Let's just pretend you had $10 million and the two of you went. Mm-hmm. Would you be afraid?
Well,
no.
Doran wouldn't be afraid of them. I mean, they'd be afraid of him.
Battle of the eat me. Sorry.
Yeah. You know,
not really. Do you think they could kill you?
He's eaten a monkey before, you know, and I condemned him as a cannibal for that.
Do you think, seriously, that they would try and eat you?
Well, I mean, the thing is, anytime you go on an expedition, there's always an element of danger when you're out of your element. As an example, you go to the Amazon and you come in contact with people who have very limited contact with people from the outside world, and you are a threat to them. So, you know, there's whenever you go to any area that is limited in population and you run into peoples that don't have a lot of contact, like I said, with people from the outside world, there's always an element of danger, but... Mm-hmm. Again, that's why you know, need to make sure that you don't go off half-cocked, that you take a lot of time and effort in your preparation to ensure that while you're out there, you eliminate as much of the threat as you possibly can. So, you know, is there a risk? There's always a risk, but it's not like, I mean, if you're just going to be paranoid and afraid, you may as well not go to begin with.
Yeah, you kind of freaked me out when you were talking about the lost tribes and all the diseases you could get when you went to go look for them. It's not something people.
But again,
really,
I mean, that's where preparation is key. You make sure you do your homework, which is something that John's very good at. You make sure you do your homework and you do as much as you can before you leave.
So, John, what was the...
I take
the
whiskey. I wouldn't eat anything else but whiskey and Rufus.
Rufus. What was the...
He's letting the cat out of the bag that his main goal is he's a professional boozer.
Oh, please.
If I have enough material to make my Manhattans, you know, I don't have to worry about snake bite. And then I've got Rufus with me, so I'm
How many Manhattans have you had tonight, John?
I haven't had any.
Okay.
I haven't eaten yet. I'm on my diet, you know. I've lost all so much weight. I look like Doran's leg.
Oh.
Oh my God. We're not getting away from that. I'm trying to focus on Bigfoot, and it's like a Weight Watchers show.
Here, I got something. Let me add something here.
What?
Okay. As I was listening to Clayton Morris and Jim Harold on the Paranormal Report, it's a video show. You can find it on the internet. Apparently, this guy, Robert Lindsay, is representing this hunter. The hunter's name is Justin Smedja, or maybe pronounced Smedja. I don't know. He claims that he shot to death two Bigfoot, or feet, I should say. And it's been some time. August, I believe it was. I could be wrong on the date. But just recently, this information is coming out, and he apparently did this Gold Lake, California. Okay, this was something else that's recently been released. He gutted the animals and took some of the meat, and he took some of the meat and sent three pieces in for DNA testing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and apparently,
have you heard of this, you guys?
No.
I've heard many similar stories, but go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bone is what's important, not meat. Bone.
Bone?
Well, we don't know what it is. We just know it's three samples. In his story, when he was interviewed, he claimed he had taken some of the meat, some of the brain, some of the teeth, some of the skull, and the hide itself.
Okay, well, that right there makes me suspicious. Okay, let me just tell you. Let's say this creature is 300 or 400 pounds. Let's just say that, right?
That's why he didn't
There's no reason. No, but listen. As an outdoorsman, as a hunter, as somebody who does that type of thing on a regular basis, it would have been nothing for him to skin the entire animal, bring the skin back. It would have been nothing for him to remove the head and bring the head back. You know, why would he just be taking these small pieces off of it when he could bring back nearly, except for the fleshy part, he could bring back nearly the entire carcass?
Well, he had two.
That's what I said.
He had two of them, remember, so that's 600 pounds. So if you take just the heads and...
Well, the skin doesn't weigh 600 pounds. The head doesn't weigh 600 pounds. The hands and feet don't weigh 600 pounds.
I said the same thing to him, yeah.
Well, no, but so think about it. You're not going to carry 600 pounds. There's no way. You're not going to carry 300.
I didn't say that. I said you skin the entire thing out. You take the hands, the feet, the head, and the entire skin. That weighs probably 75, 80 pounds. You could get that out easily.
Well, that's what he did. That's what he's claiming. He's got stuff. But listen, here's
what
the
video. Look like?
Let me play the video that I heard. I got 2 minutes worth of audio right quick.
That there's been a test of a gene called the MC1R gene, and it's on three different specimens. They say that the hair color of Bigfoot, according to this, is red or auburn. And they say that, now, it's kind of conflicting here, because in one paragraph they say that this gene shows that they are human, but just barely, and then elsewhere it says that they're non-human, so I'm not quite sure of the dichotomy there, but it's interesting. If this is a valid report, and we're getting this from bigfootevidence.blogspot.com, if this is a valid report and they actually have nuclear DNA testing, the ramifications could be absolutely great, because then you know that there's some kind of species and a heretofore undiscovered species is the most fascinating thing.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'll read to you a portion of Robert Lindsay's quotes here, because I think it's fascinating. This comes right from his discussion. He hasn't released the full documentation yet, but he says this. And we can even put this up on the screen here. You can follow along. The results from the MC1R gene test were very...
Put the Halloween suit in the refrigerator and threw some chicken guts on it.
Were you guys done listening?
No, we couldn't hear it.
Oh, is that
we
right?
Heard nothing. Yeah. I'm sure the audience heard it, but we couldn't hear anything, so they can't comment.
Just how does he describe these big feet? What is
no,
it
no, no, no. I read to you, what I just described to you was an article that was written after this interview, this video interview. And the interview didn't have them on the. They were just commentators talking about a previous interview. So they didn't know that this guy had come out and talked to another reporter and said that he had actually gut these animals, that he had actually taken these pieces and where he had actually done this. He kind of like was pressured, you know, the person that was doing the interview kind of pressured him into it, into, you know, slipping and saying exactly what he had done. And he was told by this Robert Lindsay guy not to do this, you know. And apparently, and according to this interview that or this audio clip that I was just playing, these guys are aware that Robert Lindsay didn't want any of this information out. But he was talking about the DNA test and that the test came back positive, but it's not completely human. It's some type of human that they're going to classify as a new type of human.
A new type.
Well, let me tell you this: if I actually shot a Bigfoot, you know, I always find all of this stuff suspect. Like I said, it's another blurry camera picture. If I shot Bigfoot, I'd have that sucker strapped across the front end of the hood of my truck, and I'd be driving downtown with it. I'm just telling you, it's always like, oh, well, I did this, and I did that.
I get it. I said the same thing to Robbie. I was like, these people never had, like, why wouldn't they just, like, call ABC and be like, look.
They would. That's what
I would be, and I'd be selling, and I'd be putting that sucker up on eBay for the highest bidder.
So if you were, I'm going to imagine, I don't know as a fact, but I think if you Google Robert Lindsay, you may find him attached to several sightings of Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Several.
That's why I was asking you earlier if you were familiar with the guy. I wanted to know what your opinion was, because I do know that he, you know, there are some articles that has his name attached to it, and I was just wondering, maybe you guys knew of him and that he was one of those type of people that creates the hoaxes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say this is a hoax.
It's similar to many hoaxes going back. I can start talking about stuff going back 50 years.
Personally, I don't care either one way or the other. It's all good with me. It would eliminate one of the paranormal dilemmas that are just plaguing most of us that are trying to get to the bottom of things. But I will tell you this. I would like to know what you guys would do if this video and that they're talking about this evidence, this DNA evidence, what are you going to do if it is legitimate? What would you say? What would you... I mean, this is in Northern California, and... A hunter that was hunting bear, he had a bear permit, happened to shoot two of them.
In Northern California?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah. He says
they
don't exist there.
They've never been legitimately reported except for all the Bluff Creek Wallace rubbish. DNA is going to say it's something we don't have classified. It's not going to prove anything. It's just that it's not classified.
Yeah. If it were in the Susquehanna, is that right, district?
Susquehanna.
Yeah,
you know,
that
biologists
would be different.
Biologists admit it plain 50 years ago. Do you want to prove it? You got to get one. Simple, you have to get the carcass.
Right.
You have to get the skull.
You have to get the carcass. You have to bring it all in. You can't bring in little bits and pieces and say that, oh, you know, this is the creature. And like I said, if the guy's an experienced hunter, he obviously was out hunting for bear. Bear can weigh up to several hundred pounds. He obviously had a plan to get those bear back to his vehicle. So if he could get a bear back to his vehicle and bring it home and process it, he could dang sure get a Sasquatch back to his vehicle.
Well, I have to tell you that was the statement that the interviewer made, and he went off. That's when he divulged all his information.
Right. All right. We've run out of time. And I want John to tell everybody where they can find this Bigfoot, Recasting Bigfoot book. Where can
it's
we find it?
Online them? Everywhere. You can order it at Barnes & Noble. You can order it online wherever you want. Now that Borders is gone, you don't have that option anymore, but it's easiest to get online. It's everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Powell's. Everybody
has
it.
All right, perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on. Really, you guys were really informative. It was great. New perspectives. I loved hearing about it. So thank you very much. And have a great
night.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys. Stay tuned for SF Talk Radio here on Tenacity Radio. Real entertainment, no excuses.